We have things to talk about. Hey, you know, the phone doesn't work, so guess what? Atascadero Mike came to me. I can't hardly beat that for service right there. We'll talk to Mike a little bit.
And now, here's Bill Bitica.
I caught the end of it because, you know, I'm doing my work. I'm trying to get the computer ready and all that stuff. But it said somewhere along the line, somebody someplace, for some reason, has said that nude dancing should be considered art. So here you go. Nude dancing is not art. It's not freedom of speech. It's naked women. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Hello.
Most smokehouse barbecues would knock them out of the park over and over with their award-winning baby back ribs to their pulled pork, chicken, and shredded beef tri-tip and Louisiana hot link sandwich. All right, here we go. Let's do our who's, what's, birthdays of the things that are going on, and we'll do that right now. Our flashback in history, our highlight on September 15th of 1972, terrorism struck the Munich Games as members of the Palestinian group Black September attacked the Israeli delegation. 11 Israelis, 5 guerrillas, and a police officer were killed in the resulting siege, and all of the attackers were ultimately tracked down and done in. On this date in 1836, Sam Houston was elected president of the Republic of Texas. In 1939, 4 days after war broke out in Europe, President Franklin D. Roosevelt issued a proclamation declaring U.S. neutrality in the conflict. That didn't last. 1945, Japanese-American Ivor Turgi de Aquino, suspected of being wartime broadcaster Tokyo Rose, was arrested in Yokohama. De Aquino was later convicted of treason and served 6 years in prison. She was pardoned in 1977 by President Gerald Ford. Is that a Japanese name? Tokyo Rose's last name was Aquino? Okay. Let's go on. De Aquino is actually what it was. All right. In 1957, the novel On the Road by novel On the Road by Jack Kerouac was first published by Viking Press. 1975, President Gerald R. Ford escaped an attempt on his life by Lynette Squeaky Fromm, a disciple of Charles Manson in Sacramento. To this day, nobody knows why anybody would want to shoot the man anyway. 1997, Britain's Queen Elizabeth II broke the royal reticence over Princess Diana's death, delivering a televised address in which she called her former daughter-in-law a remarkable person. Oh, I'm doing my thought for the day. John Cage said this, ideas are one thing and what happens is another. They're not digging real deep for some of these, you know what I'm saying? But okay. Our birthday today, comedian and actor Bob Newhart is 83. Actress Raquel Welch is 72. College Football Hall of Famer Jerry Lavias is 66. Kathy cartoonist Kathy Guesswhite is 62. Actor Michael Keaton is 61. TV personality Dweezil Zappa is 43. And actress Rose McGowan is 39. Happy birthday to them, but most especially to you if it is yours.
Happy birthday to you.
Have you ever worked with Coastal Computers? Coastal Computers is here for the small business that needs computers, technology, and networking to stay even and be competitive. They're here for the small business that can't afford to hire a computer staff. They're here for the small business that needs to get it right the first time, who can't afford the pain and the horror stories that we've all heard about. Coastal Computers has been making the tough stuff easy for over 25 years with lots of happy clients. They're worth a call at 543-9047. Call 543-9047. Coastal Computers, Microsoft, Intel, and networking specialists. 543-9047 or visit ccslo.com. ccslo.com right now. The small business favorite's favorite, ccslo.com. Coastal Computers. All right, here with Bill. This is CalcoastNews.com for this Wednesday, and let's tell you what's going on. A 50-year-old Aurora Grande man who ignited himself with gasoline Monday and ran across the swinging bridge in front of numerous witnesses has died. Aragrani police officials said that Jason Noble Cox died Wednesday at 9:45 at the Grossman Burn Center at Sherman Oaks Hospital after suffering third-degree burns over most of his body. Police officials termed the death a suicide. Cox's clothing and body was ablaze and fully involved when passerbys helped to put out the fire, according to police reports. And then, of course, there was a grass fire that was also put out by the fire department. Paso Robles water battle lingers. A local judge said Tuesday that his decision on the fate of the new water rates in Paso Robles will await a higher court ruling on the same matter, which is due shortly. A lawsuit brought by resident John Borst and several other individuals alleged the city officials attempt to tie residential water rates to payments for the city's share of Nacimiento water projects. It was, in fact, a new tax assessment. Borst's lawsuit asserts that the residents are due an $8 million refund for monies unlawfully collected by the city. That contention was turned aside last year by Judge Martin Tangeman, who said the increase compromised a fee and therefore, I'm sorry, can I say it again? The increase comprised of a fee and therefore was lawful. Borst challenged that ruling, saying that the increase should have been put to voters as a proposed tax increase. Judge Jack Crawford, rather wait to hear what an appellate court has to say about the previous related case. That decision could be rendered sometime within the next few weeks. We have one more story. I'm pretty sure. I know we do. All right. Bomb squad into Diablo Canyon. Bomb squad was called to Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. That's because they investigate a paper bag full of what is suspected to be articles of clothing that was tossed over the fence. You know, that they could, you know, exploding skivs. So they want to make sure it was okay. Apparently, an angry spouse of a plant employee at about 2 p.m. on Tuesday. An unnamed woman showed up at the plant's front entrance and threw what appeared to be several articles of clothing in a paper bag over the front gate, saying, "This is not a bomb." Woman suffers from a mental illness, sheriff's official said in a press release. As a precaution, deputies are planning to x-ray the items, and traffic is being routed to another entrance. Nevertheless, the incident posed no risk or operations at the plant, which is located 6 miles north of the welcome entrance to Diablo Canyon, spokesman Blair Jones. And that's what's happening on CalCoastNews.com as of 12:15. On this Wednesday. Don't forget that you can go to Talk Is Cheap in the upper right-hand corner. Click on it, and we're streaming live, and there's podcasts of past shows.
CalCoastNews.com on KYNS, your news station.
Dan, dan, dan. Hey, we got what a special gift I got from Tasker Mike. You know, Mike's son goes to art school up in San Francisco, and so he brought, what's the name of this place you went?
Molinari's.
Molinari's is right there across from the park and below Coit Tower, so to speak.
It's at 300 Columbus Street.
I thought
that's
that.
It. There you
and
go.
He brought me a salami from Molinari's, which is really a special treat. Thanks, Mikey.
Yeah, that place has been there for over 150 years.
The salami's been there 149.
That's it, yeah. And I learned something. Well, this was several months back, but I learned when you get a salami like that, don't put it in the refrigerator. It damages it.
Just leave it out?
You leave it out. You put it in a like a brown paper sack and just leave it at room temperature. You don't get the salami cold.
And just gnaw on it every now and then.
That's it.
Like a rat.
Put your teeth to the
speaking of rats, let me get this one here. This is a holy cow kind of thing. This is amazing. Let me find it here for us here right here.
I liked your last story. We've got our own fruit of kaboom.
Fruit of kaboom.
Yeah, we've got our own fruit of kaboom.
This is a, what did it say? How many countries? Oh, the U.S. warns 39 nations about the Hanna virus because all these people visited Yosemite National Park and waded through the mouse poo. So I still find this rather remarkable. You know, I mean, you expect that when you go to a motel, the sheets will be clean. They would have vacuumed a little bit, you know.
Yeah, you figure, especially the prices that they charge in those kind of places.
Perhaps we could clean it. Yeah. Okay. Here's Mike and I were just going to bat some stuff around a little bit because there's things we don't want to talk about. Now, here, I'm shocked about something I read here today because I didn't know. And I know ignorance is no excuse, but now that I know, now I could end up being a scofflaw. But not really because I don't have any money. But they, you know, this deal where if you have over $10,000 in home renovation, they want you to have a $400 energy audit.
Yes.
Okay. Now, nobody says you have to do it. There's no, you don't have to do it. You have to have the audit, though.
Yes.
So that supposedly you'll feel better about doing it or something. I don't know what the hell.
No, it's a nice revenue enhancer.
And here they said, and here's what they said. They said, you know, that, well, they could have tied it to getting a building. They are tying it to getting a building permit. But they said a lot of people, obviously, when they do renovations, they don't get building permits anyway. Now, are they talking about inside renovations or outside? Do I have to have a permit if I have an inside renovation?
In most places, you have to have a permit if you're going to change your water heater. If your water heater goes bad and you replace it, you have to have a permit.
Well, obviously, there's a lot of illegal water heaters out there.
You betcha.
and renovations, I'd say.
Because I know that in North County, anyways, in Paso Robles, I think it's $60 for the permit. To
put a new water heater
to
in?
To put a new water heater in, yes.
We've lost our minds.
You found that out,
yeah,
did you?
I did.
Yeah, the new, what is it, AB32, all the people that are complaining about how little money is going to schools and stuff, AB32, starting next year, they're going to take about between 50 and $60 million away from the schools because it's the ecology move.
What does it do for the ecology?
I'm still trying to figure that out. I've read the thing several times, and it's supposed to be some green source that it's supposed to help, but it doesn't say how. It doesn't say in which direction. It just says that it's going to cost the school systems, the California school systems, between $50 and $60 million a year.
All right, let's do this, because I told Mike about this. I found this as I was getting ready this morning. And so here's this car. This is, first you got to hear where this car is being made. Then you got to hear how much it costs. Then you got to hear what it does. But the only way you're going to know that is if I tell you this, because everything else is in kilometers. You know what I'm saying? They got to do kilometers. The electric car, there's an electric car from a very unlikely place that can go from 0 to 60 in 2.8 seconds. It's an electric car to go from 0 to 60 in 2.8 seconds. Has a top speed of kilometers. It can go kilometers before you have to recharge the batteries. Anyway, so I'm glad we never caved into that crap. Quite frankly.
Where the rubber meets the road. Tires on asphalt is the loudest noise you'll hear from this auto. There's no engine growl to speak of because this supercar is electric. And it's not from Detroit, Germany, or even Japan. This prototype comes from a small company in Croatia.
High-end sports cars or supercars have been based on the same principle for decades. They all have a very powerful petrol engine placed at the rear end, a carbon fiber chassis, and a rear wheel or four-wheel drive system. I wanted to shatter that image and take it to the next step.
Built by Rimac Automobile, just west of Zagreb, the Concept One is the brainchild of 24-year-old designer and entrepreneur Mate Rimac. He claims his supercar is the most powerful electric model ever made, able to go from 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in just 2.8 seconds, reach speeds of up to 305 kilometers an hour, and a battery range of 600 kilometers. So, what's Rimac's secret?
Our design consists of four electric motors, each one powering a single wheel independently, giving us completely new possibilities of controlling the vehicle. We call it torque vectoring. We can control each wheel independently and make adjustments 1,000 times per second.
Rimac launched the Concept One last year at the Frankfurt Auto Show. Now they're revving up for production and hoping to turn heads this week at Salon Privé in London, Britain's most exclusive auto show. With a price tag of $980,000 apiece, it goes without saying that Rimac is catering to a very small, very rich clientele.
We don't really have any direct competitors since there are no electric supercars yet. This is a first. However, there are some already established competitors who make petrol sports cars, such as Pagani, Koenigsegg, and Bugatti, all small companies that produce 15 to 30 cars per year. That's where we see ourselves. We want to sell about 15 Concept One cars per year.
Rimac already has an order from the royal family in Abu Dhabi. The company says its first Concept One should be delivered early next year. Michael Holmes, CNN, Atlanta.
I know you're saying to yourself, Bill, we couldn't see it. I know you could. You could hear it. You could hear it. You could hear the zoom, zoom, and all that. And here's how weird does it have to be to have a car go that fast, but you're not really hearing the car. You know, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
There's no motors, so there's
you
no...
You hear the screeching of the tires, and you don't hear any, you know, that type of sound to it. I know it doesn't... To me, it doesn't sound like a car. It sounds like a kid's toy.
Well, here's the thing, though. But here's the other thing, too. A lot of people that try to take a little car and make something out of nothing, you know, and they put the whatever the new version of glass packs are. I don't know what they're called anymore. But, you know, the car sounds like it's got something going on. It's got a little four-banger engine that's not doing anything.
Right.
Like my car, you know what I mean? Jeez. I can run faster. My car will go. Anyway, they... it's just kind of weird when they do that. Now, here's another thing that I also, I'm assuming, I know friends with motorcycles, I don't want to torque them off or anything, but I guess you don't have to have mufflers on motorcycles anymore. Is that correct?
Well, on some of them.
What
on
ones?
It's the type of engine and the amount of, you know, cubic inches to the engine, that type of stuff.
These are the ones I'm talking about that don't have mufflers.
Yeah, yeah.
So the big ones don't have to have mufflers?
I guess not. I guess that they, you know, that they...
And here you got a little scooter, and they got to put a muffler on it.
Well, the one thing that's always got me about that is you do know that the exhaust system assists your horsepower and stuff, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the less resistance there is, the greater the horsepower.
Exactly. Right. And just like if you want to increase your horsepower, what you do is you put your exhaust system so that it's equal, the pipes are equal coming to... the catalytic converter, because when most cars you have a shorter on one side than the other, because the catalytic converter doesn't lie in the middle, it usually lies on one side or the other.
Okay.
Well, if you wanted to increase your boost, the way you do it is by equaling the size of the pipes so that when both of them come out there, they're both 8 feet long or mm-hmm. 6 feet long, whatever it might be, and by equaling that you have a better power ratio. But GM, Ford, Dodge, they don't do that because it just doesn't make sense. Instead, what they do is they've gone from 14-inch wheels to 20-inch wheels, and that's where they boost your miles.
Oomph, right. And that's where replacing your tires costs $1 million now.
Yes,
you know what
it
I mean?
Is.
You
found
go back,
that out
if you
recently.
Had a, oh, I did find that out recently. You have a good old 14-inch wheel, you know, rim, you know, it's no big deal. You can buy a tire for $1.95.
Yeah.
The moment you get up there, the 17, 18s and all that, it's like, holy moly.
Yeah, my brother just recently came from from Apple Valley, and we went to the car show up in Paso Robles this weekend because we wanted to, you know, redo our youth to the latest
time,
that kind of stuff.
You should.
And they had a row of Camaros, and they were gorgeous, the old Camaros and stuff, all with about 14, 15-inch rims. And there was a brand-new Camaro at the end of the line with a 20-inch rim to it. So that's how they increased the mileage to be able to sell that, even though its horsepower is actually much less
sure.
than those other ones.
Yeah.
And then right alongside that was the Porsche setup. And there was all these old Porsches that were really nice, some beautiful old Porsches. And there was an old Porsche that was set up as it was a fairly newer Porsche that was set up as an electric car. Had 23 batteries to it. And a cruising range of a grand total of 40 miles.
Was it using, like, just Duracells or something?
No, it had those big deep cycle batteries.
Well, how come the thing only went 40 miles?
I asked him the same thing, and he says, well, it's the, you know, he started to get into the coefficient ratio.
You, I was impressed with NASCAR Mike here when he told me about the mufflers and the converters and all that. I didn't know you knew all that stuff. I didn't know any about that stuff.
Oh, when I was a kid, you had to be a shade tree mechanic. You couldn't.
Well, yeah, but you could be. You could be a shade tree mechanic when we were young.
Oh yeah, you could climb right in there with the car,
that's
with
right.
the engine. In fact, there was a car, there was a truck my one of my buddies had, and it had a six-cylinder engine in it, And there was so much room left over that the spare tire was in the front.
That's funny. We have so many car shows. I was watching for the first time. I was channel surfing, and I came across a thing called Pawn Stars.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever seen it?
Yeah.
And so it's basically life's disappointments is what it is, because the people are going to offer you next to nothing for whatever it is you have. And so the guy brought in, are you ready? He didn't bring it in. He brought on a trailer. He said it was a Shelby Cobra frame, you know, body with nothing else, you know, a little bit of running gear, but that's it. And so they brought a guy in that does Shelby Cobras, you know, some expert, and there's a certain place you look for a number or letters or something, and he found it. So he said, as it sits on that trailer right now, that's worth $60,000.
Right. Yeah.
Then he said, to make it so that it'll go, it's going to be another $100,000.
Right.
You know, so it's all fixed up. So anyway, so I forget, they offered the guy like $20,000 or $15,000 or something. I guess people must be really desperate for money when they say okay.
Yeah. You know? Well, but did he say what it would be worth after you put that extra $100,000?
Well, no, actually, that's really weird. They didn't, but they were just all excited about having this great car.
You're looking at a minimum of $250,000 that it would be worth afterwards.
Then they had a guy, another guy, his brother was a bus driver for the, what was it called, the Miracle Hockey Team, you know, the Miracle on Ice, beat the Russians. And everybody had signed this hockey stick. Everybody on the team had signed the hockey stick. So he brought that in. They bring some other expert to look at it and make sure the signatures are right. And he says, yeah. And so the guy was, I forget what he wanted, but he's, you know, it's a one-of-a-kind thing. And he said, you know, he wanted $40,000 or something for the darn thing. And they offered him like $5,000. This guy walked away. This guy said, there's no way in the world I'm taking that for the stick.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it's just fascinating. I've never been involved with pawning stuff, so I don't know.
You know, I haven't either, but I have, when I first got married, we got married in Lake Tahoe. And we went to Reno just to, you know, see their gambling places and that stuff. We spent a night over there. And it was kind of funny because there's a spot in Reno. I don't know if they still have it. And it has a plaque there. And that's where everybody, all the movie stars and stuff, used to get divorced. You'd go to Reno for a quickie divorce.
Yeah.
And you'd throw your wedding ring off this bridge into the water. Well, some star did that way back when in the 40s or 50s, I guess it was in the 50s, and it became a big thing to do that, and there's an actual store where they sell cheap replicas of wedding rings to be able to throw in the water.
That's funny.
So that,
that's funny.
So you can, you know, look like...
You do it on the cheap.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, well, that makes sense right there. That's pretty amazing. That's really quite amazing. Oh, wow. I noticed your hat. You have Tommy's World Famous. Now, back when I was a suit and tie man in L.A., I was very young back then, as you know, because I've been here forever. If you went to Tommy Burgers yourself or you drove past, it was always funny because here, Tommy Burgers is basically a burger with a lot of chili and stuff on it. And you had all these guys with their ties tucked into their shirt and bent over as they eat the Tommy Burgers. Yes. So you didn't get all of yourself.
Yeah. If you didn't get it all over you, you didn't enjoy it.
Oh, it was really funny to see all these people bent over eating a hamburger.
Well, I'll tell you, the first time I went to Tommy's was, my dad took me there. Because the original Tommy's, when he worked for General Electric, it was just a couple of blocks away from there. So what he would do is
I worked for General Electric.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he would drop me off at Tommy's and give me a few bucks to, you know, I was like 9, 10 years old. And I would get my Tommy's fix and be able to sit there with a bag of chips, a can of Coke, and... a Tommy Burger.
Now, how many Tommies are there now, do you know?
I believe that there are 20-something of them.
And now, are they franchises, or are they all still owned by the same company?
You know, it used to be owned all by the same
people. I think they're franchised.
But I think now that they are franchised because they even have them in I think, Las Vegas and stuff.
Well, the other thing is Nancy and I ate at one. I'm trying to remember where it was. We were on our way to or from... Bakersfield or some damn
And they've got them out in the boonies there.
Yeah.
And
but it wasn't. It was not the same as the one downtown at all.
When we go down to Los Angeles, that's what we try to always stop at the original Tommy's. This is how long I've been going to Tommy's. When I went there, Tommy was still there. He would still
be there.
Yeah. And he would greet the people, and he was the nicest guy. Nicest guy. And there was a little politically incorrect little Asian guy that sat behind the cash
register. I think you're supposed to say Asian, aren't you?
Yeah.
Is that the right thing
anyways,
to say?
This guy was great. He would, by the time he was, he kept that place moving so fast because I don't know if you've ever been there. There have been lines that are literally a block long.
Yeah, yeah.
And he kept that place running so fast that by the time you gave him your order, gave him your money, and he gave you your change, your food was there.
I mean,
he just kept that thing going. And I guess recently he finally retired because he had been there for at least 35 years that I know of.
You know what's interesting? I'm kind of surprised and a little bit disappointed, I'll tell you honestly, that they would franchise and then let things go to hell. Because, you know, the if you remember, McClintock's and Arroyo Grande was originally a franchise.
Right.
And they just did not like the way they were running the place, and so they had the option of buying it back, which they did. And you would think almost that Tommy's would have that same kind of an affair.
I would think so, you know, but I don't know. Maybe the money just looked too good because now they even have Tommy wagons that go around, and you can rent a Tommy wagon to, like, for your party and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You have the advertisement for it. But the original Tommy's is the only one that I've ever been to that I have never been disappointed. I mean,
it was very consistently great.
You know, my wife gets the burger, I get the hot dog or the chili tamale, and you know.
It almost doesn't make sense that the franchisees would have different, you know, food that's not the same. I mean, I can't imagine if you went to an In-N-Out Burger. I mean, I imagine if you went to an In-N-Out Burger any place, it's going to be the same In-N-Out Burger.
It's supposed to be, yeah. But I think that I'm not positive, but I think that they have the option at Tommy's of where to buy the meat and where to buy some of the other things. But the chili is still their mixture of chili.
Well, that's okay.
But then they can thin it down.
Well, yeah, put chili on a piece of cardboard.
That's right.
Now, did you know, and I invite anyone to do this, to look up on the Internet, just Google it, and go to Secret Menus. And do you know how many restaurants have secret menus?
Uh-huh.
And In-N-Out has one. You can get. I ordered one myself. I ordered two things. I ordered what's called a 2x4, which is four pieces of cheese and two patties.
Yeah, we used to get the 4x4 when I lived down
in
L.A.
That's with four patties, right?
Yeah.
Jeez, but that was when I was
young and stupid.
Oh, okay.
I could eat that.
Well, you can get fried onions or grilled onions instead of regular onions.
I always get the grilled onions.
See, I didn't know about this. They don't have it on the menu now. They don't tell you that anymore.
No, they don't tell you most of the
stuff. They have a monster burger. You know how many burger patties it is?
No.
100.
I don't know how many people have ordered.
I guess you use it for a part. I don't know how you carry it or what you carry it in. They showed a picture of it. You know, here's 100 burgers stacked in a big stack, not stacked up straight,
right,
but stacked up laying down. Anyway, I guess you can use it for a part. But I was surprised. And then, like, Jamba Juice has all kinds of weird flavors that aren't on their menu.
Right, yeah.
You know, jujubes and funny things,
yeah.
You know. Who else had stuff? I was kind of curious about.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. There's things at Tommy's that you can order that they don't normally have and stuff, but you order it that way. And they used to, you know.
Well, what's with this sneaky business? Why not just have people?
People just would come in and they would say, you know, that for instance, they want In-N-Out, that they want cheese and they want the dressing on the French fries. And so they would put that on there. Or that they want the hamburger without a bun. You know, they were into that big thing where they would put the lettuce on. So that, you know, but I remember going back to, and this was when I lived down in L.A. a long time ago, and I was doing artwork for a place, and we would go to one of the original In-N-Out Burgers, which was way over in Lakewood. And this buddy of mine just loved them. And we'd always get the 4x4s. So you get the 4x4, the French fries, and a drink, you know, and just stuff yourself. And well, the way that I originally, when I was in college, I was going to college in L.A. at Otis Parsons. Then it was just called Otis Art Institute. And Tommy's wasn't too far away from that. And so I would go there after late nights, and you would see all of the news people from Channel 2, 4, 5, 9, 11, and 13 would all be there at Tommy's.
That's fun.
And I met more news people and found out more of what they didn't or couldn't put on television at the time.
Whereas Vanna White and that other guy were in a bar somewhere drinking wine.
That's right, yeah.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting. Very good. All right, that's just interesting. I was just so surprised that they had so many things that, you know, they don't say anything about it.
I still find out about that kind of stuff now and find it
interesting. All right, we're going to be back with more. Music today's from Michael Martin Murphy after these words.
Greetings, fellow travelers and fellow students. This is the Good Doctor. Oh, I love this time of year. All those fresh-faced young Cuesta and Poly kids, so full of life and other effervescent fluids. It takes me back to my old college days at Boyle Green University, then my master's in red beans from Rice, and my doctorate from Oklahoma State. I'm here to impart an important lesson to all you new students who won't find it in any textbook. Number one, your mama ain't here no more, and she ain't gonna cook you no homemade breakfast. Number two, the Bon Ton Creole Cafe has the best homemade breakfast in town and serves it till 2 p.m. And three, Bon Ton Creole Cafe loves you so much, just text the word Gator right now to 68255 and get a free fried green tomato appetizer, courtesy of the Bon Ton Creole Cafe. Well, we're not your mama, but until you head home with that sack of dirty laundry, we're all you got. 1000 Olive Street, San Louisiana.
Hello, Bill Senna's Insurance Services. How may I help you?
My mother-in-law just moved in, and I think she slipped a cog in her wheel, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, she's 89 years old and still insists on driving her car, cooks and leaves the oven on, and her medical bills are through the roof. Can you help?
Of course we can help. Bill Senna's Insurance is a full-service insurance agency and has been in business for over 20 years, offering top insurance carriers, giving you only the best protection for the whole family. Medical, dental, home, auto, business, long-term care, life insurance, and even Medicare prescription drug plans for your mother-in-law.
So you're a one-stop shop for all my insurance needs?
Yes, we are. Bill Senna's Insurance gives you peace of mind.
So we're covered if she burns the house down?
Absolutely. And Bill Senna's Insurance Service never charges a fee for our service. And we'll find the right policy for you.
Huh, good. Because I want to live life large and fully charged.
Bill Senna's Insurance is on East Grand Avenue in Dollar Store Center in Arroyo Grande. Or call 489-HELP. That's 489-HELP.
To the town of Aguapuya rode a stranger one fine day. Hardly spoke to folks around him, didn't have too much to say. No one dared to ask his business, no one dared to make a slip. A stranger there among them had a big iron on his hip.
Big iron on his hip.
It was early in the morning when he rode. Came riding from the south side, slowly looking all around. He's an outlaw loose and running, came the whisper from each lip. He's here to do some business with a big iron on his hip.
Big iron on his hip.
In this town there lived an outlaw by the name of Texas Red. Many men had tried to take him, and that many men were dead. He was vicious and a getter, though a youth of 24, and the notches on his pistol numbered 1 in 19 more, 1 in 19 more.
Now the stranger started talking, made it plain to folks around. He was an Arizona Ranger, wouldn't be too long in town. He came here to take an outlaw back alive. didn't matter. He was after Texas Red. After Texas Red. Wasn't long before the story was relayed to Texas Red. But the outlaw didn't worry, men that tried before were dead. 20 men had tried to take him, 20 men had made a slip. 21 would be the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. The morning passed so quickly, it was time for them to meet. It was 20 past 11 when they walked out in the street. Folks were watching from the windows, everybody held their breath. They knew this handsome ranger was about to meet his death. About to meet his death. There was 40 feet between them when they stopped to make their play. And the swiftness of the ranger is still talked about today. Texas Red had not cleared leather for a bullet fairly ripped. And the ranger's aim was deadly with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. It was over in a moment and the folks had gathered round. There before them lay the body of the outlaw on the ground. Oh, he might have gone on living, but he made one fatal slip when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. Big iron. Big iron on his hip.
I got the Western stuff right there. The big iron's on his hip and whatnot. That's Michael Murphy there. Mike tells me that I played the wrong. I got the wrong album. You know, I should be. This is Tall Grass and Cool Water. Or something.
Yeah,
is what I'm
he
playing.
Got the Sons of the Pioneers.
Well, listen here.
Dedication.
Listen here. I got Campfire on the Road. These are his albums. Tall Grass and Cool Water, a Christmas thing. Buckaroo Bluegrass.
A little bit.
You say it for me. Okay?
No, I'm not.
Buckaroo Bluegrass.
Buckaroo.
I can't believe
Bluegrass.
It. Bluegrass? That's it right there, what there you just you said. Okay. And then Heartland Cowboy, Cowboy Songs. Here's Heartland Cowboy, another volume. Here's Live at Billy Bob's Texas, Cowboy Classics.
That's what you're basically taking
well,
those
where you find? Where are you finding some other album that doesn't have all that junk?
Well, look at his greatest hit.
He doesn't have any.
He doesn't have any.
He had a greatest hit. With Wildfire, I don't see a greatest hit album.
No, he not only had greatest hits, but he also wrote hits for other people. So Michael Martin Murphy did have quite a few hits actually. But they were all country hits, but you know.
Why does it say the best of the Monkees here?
I think that he wrote one for the Monkees.
Oh,
too.
He did?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm not finding that. I'm really Songs of the Trail and all this country stuff. I'm not seeing. Wrote a lot of albums here, but I'm not seeing anything. I'm not seeing any of that. Anyway, is that Michael Martin Murphy? And he did Wildfire, which I'll do just because it's tradition. And even though it's a really pathetic song, we'll do that.
Yes.
At the end, though, yeah. Before I go home. Mike, I got to tell you something. I was absolutely stunned. For the very first time, instead of leaving the station and going left onto Buckley Road and out, you know, home, I went right because I've never been back here and behind the radio station. I could not believe how many businesses are back there. This is like a little industrial park back here. I thought it was a dead end. Anyway, it is a dead end, but you go right and there's an industrial park. And there's a bakery, an Edna Bakery. I'm not sure where that Edna Bakery sells their food at.
Yeah, but Edna Bakery. I mean, I've heard of Edna Bakery.
Well, there's Edna Bakery. There's Farb's Bakery, you know, over whatever that street
Farb's
is. Barb Farb runs. Barb Farb runs.
Brands.
Barb Farb is in charge of Barb's Bakery. That's a true story. I met Barb Farb. She did us a favor. She did this wonderful thing for us one time. If anybody that's been here long enough remembers the Wine Street Inn and back in the old days at the network. And Tom used to make a roast beef sandwich on round bread. He had this round bread. You know what it actually was? It was just coffee cans. And Barb Farb made the bread for him.
Really?
Yeah, so I don't know what I was seeing her about. I forget why I went to see Barb Farb. I don't for the life of me know why I would have been there. But anyway, maybe I just wanted to say, where's your bread go? I don't see your bread anywhere. Some, I don't know. Maybe I was just curious. But anyway, so she's a very nice lady and nice people there. And so I noticed these cans, and I said, why would you have all these empty coffee cans? And so she goes, do you remember who used to have round bread? I said, yeah. It was Wine Street Inn. She goes, yeah. We used to bake his bread in those. I said, that is totally cool. I remember a sandwich he had that was really great. So she said, I'll tell you what, I'll make a couple loaves of bread, and you can make yourself the sandwich. So we also took a few back to them. So all it was cream cheese, roast beef, spinach, I think a little mayo, and that was it.
Spinach,
yes. Raw spinach. Raw spinach. I don't mind raw spinach. I think it's fine.
Okay.
But that cooked stuff, what happens to spinach when you put heat to it? It's not like barbecue. When you put heat to something, it comes out really good.
I just thought anything that was green, you get away from.
I'm not. I like corn. It's yellow.
Yeah.
I'm not a big green person there. I don't know what it is. But anyway. Now, here was we should hit a couple things in the paper because they don't make any sense. And this was...
Just a couple things?
Nothing makes sense. Of it. Here's the thing. We're debating the death penalty again. It's jolted back to life. And so the guy who was the original proponent of the death penalty, reinstating it back in 1978, he's now the guy that's totally against it because basically here's the reason. And it's because of, you know, the ACLU and the courts. Let me hear what they said. It's cost $4 billion to execute 13 people since 1978, approximately $330 million per execution.
Well, you do realize that in the state of California that we take the longest time. The average takes 37 years to execute in California.
But here's the thing. So here's what I don't understand, though. What are they counting the legal fees that would be incurred if the person, you know, they count the legal fees for a public defender?
Well, I don't know if this is.
If you put somebody away.
This has changed.
Yeah.
What it was is that when you were condemned to death, that automatically that goes for appeal. Automatically.
Right, right.
And you are given a bank of lawyers to make that appeal in as many ways as possible. Well, what they discovered is if you make the appeal with all the different ways right off the bat, you've blown your appeals. So what they do is they make an appeal. It takes a couple of years for that appeal to go through and the court system to say yes, no, or I think you're crazy. And then
they file
another one.
But here's what I don't know. So that's
what. Money.
Okay, well that must be it then. When they talk about cost, because if you're going to incarcerate somebody for the rest of their life without a possibility of parole, that's not going to be cheap either.
Well, no, but the average person from what I understand, the average person that we have incarcerated in California costs us about $50,000 and $60,000 a year to have that person in jail. Now, what that means is to house them, to feed them, to pay for the lights and the guards and whatever else, it's between $50,000 and $60,000 a year. Well, the people that are on death row and anybody that's going to be executed is on death row. They end up costing us between $200,000 and $300,000 a year to house them, because of the high security. You have much more guards there. It's much more expensive to have those people out as individuals for their freedom time. They're walking around, whatever it is, that, you know, all that kind of stuff. Hey, sorry about
that. Wait, no, that's okay. I thought what started on me that I did?
Yeah.
I don't know, that was the first time I didn't do it.
Really?
That was the first time it wasn't my mistake. Well, I think we need the island like they had the movie with Ray Liotta. What was it called? where he was on the island. All criminals went to an island. They monitored him on a TV.
You could go further back and go to Escape from New York.
Escape from New York. Actually, Bill O'Reilly used to say, which made a lot more sense, he said, what you do is you have, you know, island's a great idea, but the other thing you have is you're absolutely guaranteed that nobody's going to try to escape is you do it in the Arctic.
Right.
And then you drop food in and whatnot, you know, because who's going to try to, where are you going
to
go?
Or you take them to the furthest that you can in the middle of the desert and the same thing, you know.
I think we should harvest their organs first, though.
Well, that was, you know, that was one, in some countries, China, they do exactly that.
Yeah, they do.
When a person has committed the crime that they're going to be executed for.
And they're executed within an hour and a half, I'll tell you.
Yeah, they execute them so that they can harvest their organs. And we're one of the actual few countries that doesn't take the blood when people have died and use that for blood donations.
Yeah, we just pour it down a drain, I guess.
Yep.
Well, that's all very interesting, I think. There's a show on A&E or some channel right now that everybody, they said to watch, the newspaper said you should watch it, Coma. It's a thing called Coma.
About, yeah, it's a remake of a movie.
Yeah, some weird thing where people are in comas and they're monitored and all that. I turned it on for about 2 seconds, and it was creepy. I don't need creepy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've had enough weird stuff in my life. I don't need creepy on top of that. You know, I haven't had creepy that much, but I don't want creepy.
Oh, I've been going through enough medical stuff that I decided, I'll watch a little bit of it and find out what they want me for.
Unbelievable. Well, here's what happened in the big, the wake of Hurricane Isaac. Here's the numbers they came up with. They said 13,000 people had homes that were damaged. Total number of people without power is 38,000 by yesterday afternoon. That's a lot. 1,600, the number of people in shelters Tuesday, it was 6,000. 95,000 number of people who have sought federal aid for damages, which is not surprising. And then 15,000 number of dead. Oh, this is what they, what happened, a bunch of rats drowned. It was really weird. All of a sudden they saw these rats. 15,000 rats washed ashore, dead rats.
Is it the... We're going to have the ASPCA?
Well, no, we're going to. Maybe we're going to have the Hanta flooding or whatever it's called. I don't know what's going to happen. So, hey, anyway, so a lot of people are outside of New Orleans are saying that the Army Corps of Engineers fogged up, and what they did was by doing the new levee system they did there, they screwed them.
Yeah.
Now, and so here's I'm waiting. I'll see how this goes. Of course, they're gonna decide themselves, I think, whether or not they did or not. I can't really see them saying, oh, yes, we did. So we'll see, though. But this is the same Army Corps of Engineers, as I mentioned to you earlier, that took the breakwater in Morro Bay and put it at the wrong angle. So it creates a danger. So I'm not always sure that, you know, they're the people right on top of the whole thing.
You know what I haven't understood yet is my dad bought a boat back in the late 60s, and that boat had a one-way valve on it because as you're riding in a, you know, a ski boat, and as you're hitting the wakes and stuff, water's going to come into the boat. So there's a one-way valve so that it lets the water out of the boat. Now...
Is it a pump?
No.
It's a valve.
It's a one-way valve. It's basically it allows water to flow one way.
Okay.
Why don't they have that? I mean, because that was back
The 60s. But here was a weird thing that happened. This is what the weird thing that happened in this particular Isaac thing. And that was that because it was only going 14 miles an hour, that was a problem because that's as fast as it was traveling. And so between the storm surge and everything filling up like a bowl on the inside because of all the rain they had, it was a kind of a double whammy thing. And I take it in some places there was a breach of some levees. And that's the old, I said it's like the Titanic, you know, when they built the watertight doors on the Titanic that really weren't watertight. They only went up to a certain distance, and then you could pour water over the top. Well, that kind of did that in. So kind of the same idea, but it'll be interesting to see really what they find out, because I would imagine that if you can make New Orleans itself safe with levees and dams and, you know, gates and pumps and all that stuff, you must be affecting some other place.
Yeah, you'd have to.
You'd have to.
Like you said, the fact, at one point, I think that storm was going at only like 10 miles an hour. Yeah, so, and dumping water the whole time. So, and not just like a rain, but I mean like a downpour, something that we only see once in a great while around here. But to have that much water that's inside and outside, and both of them filling up to a certain point, and they actually breach the levee themselves in certain spots to keep it from totally collapsing in areas, and they flooded areas themselves. They had to. So it seems like somebody was only halfway figuring things out in this.
Well, you know, I mean, they didn't want a repeat of what happened, you know, before. So they said, okay, we'll make sure that, you know, we don't have a Super Bowl filled with people or whatever they call
it. What I'm trying to figure out is, you know, in the Netherlands, the Dutch, they have all these dike systems and stuff that they've had for hundreds of years because a lot of their land is below
the sea level.
Yeah. And I've never heard, maybe they just don't have the news come all the way over here, but I've never heard of any of the problems that they've had like we've had. So can we get somebody on a plane?
Well, now they're saying you know the dying infrastructure thing. They're saying that we could ultimately have real problems up in the Sacramento Delta with a levee system up there that they're really concerned about, you know, how well that's going to survive.
I can believe that.
Yeah, I can believe that, too. Really strange. I want to talk about something, but I can't do it. I don't have time now. Oh, yes, we do. We've got 2 minutes. Pentagon says the SEALs book has classified information in it. So this mope that decided to go ahead and spill the beans on that. Now, one thing that's interesting is I don't know if there's a picture in the book or why they showed the picture of it. It made no sense to me unless it's in the book. They showed a picture of the kind of night vision goggles that they use, the SEALs have, that are kind of special and all this kind of stuff. And what's interesting about that is years ago in the Republic of South Vietnam, back when it was a Republic of South Vietnam, there was we had a starlight. The very first night vision thing was called a starlight scope. It really didn't. It wouldn't not work off of the light of one star, I promise you.
No.
But anyway, but it was totally top secret, classified, whatever. You were ordered in the event that you were going down the boat with the, that was the one thing you were supposed to destroy, if you could. And if it broke, if yours didn't work, you would have it, they would send it to where whoever made the darn thing, and you'd have it back within 5 days.
Wow.
So here's what's weird. They thought it was that important to have it back in 5 days, and it didn't work worth a dang. In the monsoon season, you couldn't see anything out of the darn thing. You couldn't see anyway during the monsoon season, but putting a scope up to your face didn't do any good either. So anyway, that was the early stuff. Nowadays, I guess they probably have better stuff. But it was really kind of interesting, the starlight scope. That was a big deal. I think the idea was I had mounts for it. I think you were supposed to mount it on your gun or something. But then the problem was this. If you fired a round that had a tracer, the whole thing would just flare over. I mean, you just get a big green screen. It just was all green. Everything turned green from the thingy. So the whole thing didn't make sense to me to begin with. All right, we're going to see if we can make some sense out of something else here after we have CBS News right now at 1 o'clock on 1340.
I knew when I met you, something was going to happen. My life was off balance, nothing had been going right. You said, oh, what's a lonesome cowboy like you doing in the city? I said, I don't. Cheers. Maybe I should have thought it over when you said, will you join me later? I said, oh, honey, I don't know if it's right. But when you turn and walk down the street, I follow. I feel like I was following a truckload of dynamite. Still taking chances, taking candy from strangers, speeding up on curves, ignoring the dangers. Feel like a fool, learning new dances, it keeps me on my toes. Still taking chances, ain't scared of winning, swinging for the bleachers in the night.
How does a little shoe store like Mike's and the Slow Promenade seem so big? They start by taking assortment to a new level. Not just any assortment, but the brands people really want and the styles people really love. Mike, Annie, Shu Sheng, and their entire crew at Mike's really know their stuff, and they're happy to make it work for you. The right people, the right place, all the time. You'll like Mike's and find what you're looking for in men's and women's shoes. Every time you hear this ad, you're just one pair away from the perfect number of shoes. Mike's Shoes at Southside Promenade. You ain't kidding right there. And let me tell you something. You're with Bill Benica and Talk is Cheap, your friends and neighbors. Network on 1340 KYNS, your news station. Also with the Tascadero Mike, who's here until 1:30. And let me tell you this. If you missed the Big Ten sale over at Mike's Shoes this last weekend, you blew it. You absolutely, ladies, you blew it. You blew it. I didn't ask for the gory details, you know. I let people do their business however they do it. But they were going to discontinue representing a certain line of sports shoes, okay? So they had $109 sports shoes for $19.95. So my mother-in-law has some, my wife has some, my grandma has. Anyway, but it was I was like, holy cow. That's how they do things. I don't know how exactly they do things, but that's how it's done. Anyway, so we just heard Still Taking Chances from Michael Martin Murphy, which was a choice of Tascadero Mike. I'd never heard it, and because we were talking the whole time, I still haven't heard it. So I'm sure it's good, though. I'm absolutely sure it's wonderful. Okay. Yeah, other things that are going on in our world. Let's see what else we can talk about, Mikey, because there's so much stuff that's going on. Oh, this is really a huge, long article about Voyager 1 and 2 are about to leave the solar system. Well, Voyager 1 is about to leave the solar system. Voyager 2 is 2 billion miles behind it or something.
And they still have total contact with it?
Yep. And it takes, let me tell you how long it takes. This is absolutely amazing. And here's the more amazing statistic. It takes like 13 hours to get a message to it and then another 13 hours back. Or is it days? Make sure I don't have it wrong. Wait a second. Yeah, 13 hours. 17 hours for Voyager 1, 13 hours for Voyager 2. And so here's the most amazing number. each only has, they're still ticking despite being relics of the early space age, each one has 68 kilobytes of computer memory. Put that in perspective, the smallest iPod, an 8-gigabyte iPod Nano, is 100,000 times more powerful. It's kind of like the difference between a single-cell animal and a human being. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Holy cow. And if these things are still stroking out there, and they said they'll last till about 2025, they think. You know, they got nuclear engines. You know, it's interesting when we launch these things that nobody's ever raised heck about it, you know. But all of these satellites we launch have nuclear power in them, you know. But nobody ever says, well, what happens if the thing blows up, you know, on the launch pad? What happens if it blows up on the launch pad?
That's a good question.
I don't know.
I'm sorry you asked.
I'm sorry I asked it, too. Anyway, so that's kind of interesting. But anyway, they said it might last till 2025. Now, it's going to get what they call a shock, a bow shock. The sun puts out these particles, okay, and they go out, and they eventually our universe is like our Milky Way, rather. Our solar system, I got it right. Our solar system is like a bubble. And so this particulate matter goes out from the sun and actually sits in a big, huge bubble of which we're inside. And so now this Voyager 1 will be the first man-made thing that's ever passed through the bubble. Now, also, here's the other weird news on this.
I'm just laughing, Bill, because I didn't know you were Italian. You're talking with your hands.
So here's the other thing that's going on. The other thing that's really funny is they have a thing they put on there. They said they have a thing to say, this we're from Earth and we're good people and all that kind of stuff. Are you ready for this?
Know, huh?
Are you ready for this? It's on an 8-track.
Yeah. I've still got an 8-track player somewhere. I don't know if it works.
I remember somebody years ago, I didn't have the money to get involved with such things, but somebody bought a Betamax, you know, well, and they said, I'm absolutely sure this is the one that's going to be successful someday.
Well, the one that's on, what was the name of, not Voyager, what was the name of the land?
The little rovers?
No, the first module on that they left on the moon.
The lunar module.
Lunar module, okay. But it had a name like Snoopy or something.
Bob
like
or something.
Anyways, it has a hello, greetings type of thing in all the different languages of the world, and it's on a record.
Now, you know what else is on that thing, which is really fascinating, and I've verified this. I've looked it up on the Internet. There's a 22-karat gold plate. Plaque on it that shows the Earth when all of the continents were connected, shows the Earth today, and it shows what the Earth they think is going to look like, you know, 1,000 years from now.
Yeah.
And we both know what's going to happen next is that all of Baja, all the way to San Francisco, California, is an island.
Yep.
Which would make sense, quite frankly, because we have continental drift anyway. We're not going to fall into the ocean, but we'll split apart at some point, and it's like not paying attention to the obvious if you don't see it. You know, the plates are moving. They're going to move. And, you know, the one plate's moving towards the northeast and the other's moving towards the southwest. Well, that's right where the thing is.
Now, you keep your eye on CNN and stuff, and they were supposed to have had a 7.9 earthquake in Costa Rica.
Yeah, they did. And yet I have. Let me see what they have here on it today right now. Let me see what's going on.
Because I know that they canceled the tsunami warnings that they had out there, because on something like that, you know, out in the water, you would figure you would have a pretty good chance for a tidal wave.
But you know what's weird? What's weird to me is that these faults now that are offshore are starting to become active. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if they were inactive, but it doesn't seem, until we had the tidal waves, you know, about, what was it, 5 years ago, the first one? And then we had another one, and then you had, of course, the Fukushima tidal wave thing. The only tidal wave I ever heard, ever from an earthquake was in Alaska, and that was back in 1957 or some darn thing.
That was in the 60s, wasn't it?
It had been early 60s. Cause I remember I was just a youngster, and at the time they said there was a wall of water that hit Alaska that was 30 feet high and traveling at 80 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And you can't. There's no way your brain can comprehend a wave going 80 miles an hour. It just can't. but they had a, I don't know where this was from, the I'll never forget this, Life magazine had a picture that was photographed from somewhere, and they showed on this pier a kid and his dog, and here's this wall of water right behind them. And then after the thing passes, they show another picture, and there's, of course, nothing on the wall. It was very dramatic.
Well, that's a nice way to...
Well, Life magazine did this thing for a while. I can't even tell you what year it used to do it. I mean, I can't tell you from when to when they did it. I can't even tell you what decade they did it. But they used to have a thing called the Beat of Life. And I remember two pictures, and it was the last page of the Life magazine, and it was some amazing photograph taken at a, just the right moment type thing, but it was always something bad. So I'll never forget, one was a guy in Europe who was a bomb squad guy, and he was disposing of a bomb, and it went off. And the photograph was taken right when his hand had just turned to mist, you know. And that was really weird. And that, I know you're thinking, Bill, what are you reading these days? This was Life magazine. They had another one where someplace like...
Not like much of a life.
I know. Someplace in Oklahoma or someplace, they were blowing up a huge inner tube, you know, for a tractor tire or something. And it blew and killed the father and son that were filling it.
Now, when you were a kid, did you ever take the inner tube from a tire, you know, and use that for either rafting or sliding down
Not
the hill?
Not a kid. I was an adult. I went river rafting.
Well,
and
most of us pleaded ignorance at the time.
Well, no. We had when I was in Spokane, we had a special event, and it was called the Kettle River Raft Race. And you didn't race at all. You just sat there with a cooler beer on a couple of inner tubes and went down the dang river. And so that's the first time I've ever used an inner tube. Now, I know I've seen people. I never used one. When I was a kid, and I see people on the snow, I saw people using inner tubes.
Yeah.
You know, we couldn't afford inner. We couldn't afford that. We had to have the plastic disc.
Well, you always found out that, or you hope that your dad didn't find out that the spare tire didn't have an inner tube in.
No, we had those. We had those flying saucers, the most uncontrollable thing that's ever been put on snow.
Yeah, well, I had a buddy, and we used to take at a park, and my nephew upgraded it when he went to high school over at Atascadero Park. After a football game, a lot of the varsity football players, they would to celebrate a victory, they would get these blocks of ice, and they would go down a hill, slide down a grass hill with these blocks of ice. Well, what we would do is when I was a kid, we would take and blow up inner tubes, and at this particular park that had a nice flowing grass hill to it, we would slide down at night when there was dew on the grass and just slide down these hills. Well, the only way to blow up the inner tube was you would go to the local gas station and blow it up. Well, I had a buddy that didn't think that it was blown up enough and kept going until it exploded. And my ears rang for at least
I would have to bet that would be a heck
I couldn't
of a bang.
Believe that. You know, you feel the concussion from that explosion.
You know how the village is supposed to have one idiot? The village I lived in Jersey had quite a few, and we were all friends. So we would take. I know this is hard to imagine that we would be. We were.
I knew there was some reason
we imported
all these guys from New Jersey.
We were like suicidal. I don't know what we were, but what we were macho. I never heard the term back then, but you had to show that you had huevos. I don't care what it was, the most dumb thing in the whole wide world, you had to show the next guy that you could do it. And so, some of the stuff, I don't get into it, but when it came toboggan time in the winter, there's a place called Mountainside Park, which was interesting because it's apparently a nationally known iris garden, you know. And so I remember in the springtime and summertime, I didn't give a ding about irises, you know. We always wanted to be winter so we could go down the hill. Well, there was actually two hills. There was one hill that everybody used, and it went down, and it was real long and didn't cross any roads or anything, so that was fine. Then there was a road behind right there, and then up there, there was another slope. But that slope had about a 10-foot drop-off. I don't want to say 10 feet. I'll say about 5 feet. Had about a 5-foot drop-off to the street. Well, what you had to do to show that you had some huevos is we all had to get on the toboggan and fly down that ridiculous slope until you, and then smash into the street. I'm serious. And we actually shattered two toboggans doing that. And I don't know. We were all hurt, you know. We were all in some state of not good, you know. But it was like, yeah, what you got to do, you know. We were all crazy.
There was a place, and this is how silly, you know, even with the adults around and stuff, there was a place up at Green Valley Lake that everybody went tobogganing at. And we would go up there for a week in the wintertime, and this one place, and it was called Suicide Hill. That was what everyone called it anyways. And it flattened out, and if you got a good run, it flattened out to the street where the traffic was.
Wow.
And now you look back at it, and that was the whole goal, was to be able to go that far to all the way out in the street.
You know, it's interesting. Well, I had a friend, because we had no money. So the friend had, I think, what do they call it, a bobsled? A bobsled. It was a sled with wheels. Okay, it was like a sled. You would use wheels, and you go down a hill, like, you know, like on a street or a driveway.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, so we were playing with his thingy, and I got on it and went right down the driveway into the street. And so I don't know if this is lucky or unlucky. I think it's lucky. A car, I instead of going under the car and getting squished, the thing hit the right on the hubcap, on the rear wheel, and I went flying forward and broke my nose. But I didn't get run over by the car anyway. That was a good news. And so the guy, you know, stops the car. Oh, my God, can I help you? No, just don't worry about it, you know. Because my father would have been, my father always blamed me for anything that happened because he was right.
That sounds like he would have been right.
Yeah. Yeah, so I didn't want to get chewed out. It was easier just to say, you know, I was playing football. Every injury I ever had was playing football. We were playing football. Anyway, so that was football. Football hit me in the face, and that broke my nose. And my father, who was a pretty intelligent man, knew everything I told him was a lie, but he didn't know really what to say about it, you know. He would just look at you like, really, that did that? That could do that? Oh, sure, Dad. Yeah, it could happen. It could happen to anybody. Anyway. Really weird. So anyway, there's lots of stuff to talk about more. We're going to talk about, they have a thing in the paper today about the dolphins, and people are clueless and cruel to dolphins. You know, they either shoot them because they're not happy they're eating fish, or they don't, and they feed them. In some places, they're talking about down here in Panama City, Florida, they feed the dolphins, the tour boats feed the dolphins chum and stuff. Well, now the dolphins can't survive on their own. They got to wait. They got to teach their young to wait for the boat to show up. You know, kind of a thing, which is really kind of stupid. And then here's some people in a play playing with a dolphin at Discovery Cove in Orlando. And here's the problem with the dolphins. People have to get over the idea that the thing's smiling. That just happens to be the shape of its head. It's not smiling at you. That's just how it looks, for gosh sakes. You know what I mean? I never hear anybody say a jellyfish is smiling at me. You know, but it could be.
No, I mean, if you're going to look for something with a big smile, a shark is smiling at you.
Shark smiling?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Got lots of teeth.
Lots of teeth there. Anyway, Mike, I thank you for joining me today. And it was fun to just have a little confab here, and we'll be back.
Hello, my name is Ivan Ulves. This week, the Treasure Ivan Show will feature the Red Scare of the 1950s as told through children's records. Were they innocent amusements for the kiddie crowd, or vicious propaganda tools to create a Soviet America? Listen in and decide for yourself. Saturday at 1:05 p.m. and Sunday at 5:05. See you there, comrades.
Just like the Dodgers on the field, your car is a finely tuned machine. Keep your car running Dodger smooth at Black Road Auto. You can save money on all types of car repair, foreign and domestic. With over 20 years of experience in transmission and car repair, Black Road Auto has over 15 acres of classic and hard-to-find auto parts. When you need your car repaired, transmission service, or auto parts, think of Black Road Auto. Black Road Auto, 1500 Black Road, Santa Maria, or call them at 346-2770. That's 346-2770.
When I first decided to go back, I was a little scared because I was older. My mom sat me down and she told me that it's not my job to be the man of the house. Her dream for me is to go back to school and finish what I started. I needed to hear that.
Jared didn't know how to get the money he needed for college.
I found out about the federal student aid program through my English teacher, and she told me, Jared, this is what you need to do. Once I got the form, I filled out the application. I did it myself.
Federal student aid made college and Jared's dreams possible.
When I first had the news that I received money, I ran downstairs and I showed my mother, and she was happy, so she started crying. But when I saw her crying, I started crying.
Need help paying for college? Go to federalstudentaid.ed.gov, an office of the U.S. Department of Education. Start here, go further.
My name is Jared, and this is my story.
Cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. He rested on the saddle as he rode upon the way. When all at once somebody heard a red-eyed Kelsey he saw thundering through the windy sky. And up a cloud he their brands were still on fire and their hooves were made of steel. Their horns were black and shiny, just as hot as you could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky. He saw some riders coming hard, and he heard their mournful cry. Yippee-yi-yay, yippee-yi-yo. Ghost riders in the sky. As they galloped past him, he heard one call his name. If you want to save your soul from hell, riding on this rain. And cowboy, change your ways today, or with us you will ride, chasing this old devil's herd through these never.
Ghost Riders in the Sky. You're Bill Benica, Talk is Cheap, Friends and Neighbors Network. Thanks for joining me on this Wednesday. And as you know, I don't have to tell you that our weather is really weird. And what they're saying is that there's a possibility of a shower today or tomorrow. I don't. Who knows? But there's some tropical thingy that's coming up from Mexico and coming our way. So that's what they're saying is the whole deal. Anyway, I don't. It looks to me like we're not going to have any rain, but. It could be raining where you are now as I'm saying that, so you should probably be careful. Mike mentioned the earthquake. It was 7.6. It struck the northwest coast of Costa Rica today, resulting in the death of at least one person. Quake struck Costa Rica's peninsula on the Pacific coast about 87 miles west of the capital, which doesn't we don't need to know all that. It doesn't mean anything to us. It was centered more than 28 miles deep. Now, and this is the interesting thing, now. When we had the San Simeon quake, and Sam Blakesley helped provide some very good information about that at the time because he's a geologist. He said the difference in earthquakes is when they and they cause tsunamis is that if they're deep, you're in much better shape. There's a good chance you won't get a tsunami. It's the when they're on a shallowish area and there's an earthquake that creates a tsunami. So I would think that 27 miles is huge as far as deep, or 28 miles rather is deep. So that's it there. And that's what's going on with that. Then you say, what else, Bill? I have a thing here. I just got to find it. I have a thing I was going to share with you. Okay. Oh, here's what I wanted to listen to this and then share it with you. CNN profiles Ed Falco's prequel to The Godfather. Now, if you know about what's going on with this. Oh, no, I can't. I'm not going to do that. The thing is a half an hour, for gosh sakes. Never mind. Anyway, it's going to be weird. Falco has written a violent book. It must be violent. It's The Family Corleone, the prequel to The Godfather by Mario Puzo. We didn't dwell on the violence in this interview because a source close to the great director of the movie version of Godfather, Francis Ford Coppola, told us Coppola never viewed The Godfather as a story primarily about the mafia. He viewed it as a story about family. Well, okay, to each his own. But then we will find out, though, a least popular job to love. This is kind of a Labor Day thing, but it doesn't matter. It's just still pertinent. And so the least popular job to love.
CNN.
Radio.
If you are a software engineer, an actuary, or a human resources manager, you hold one of the most popular jobs in the U.S. A CareerCast survey ranked 200 jobs from best to worst using factors like work environment, stress, and physical demands. I'm CNN's Edgar Tragetz. On this Labor Day, we hear from someone whose career falls into the least popular jobs category. His is number 176 of the 200 jobs ranked.
My name is Kurt Carlson. I'm 41 years old. I'm a roofing contractor, and I've started this line of work basically as a summer job to help pay my way through college.
On a recent cloudy and rain-threatening morning, I caught up with Carlson in a suburb of Atlanta. This job today has him at a house that recently suffered a lot of damage when an oak tree crashed on top of it. There's construction going on inside, and he's on top installing a new roof. But with the steady rain now having moved in, work on top of the house had to stop, and that allowed me the chance to chat with Carlson about why, to him, being a roofer is his most popular job.
Being outdoors and not being in an office or at the same location all the time, it's really nice to start and complete a job in just a few days and then go on and work in some completely different area and, you know, somewhat different challenges. I did not complete my bachelor's degree. I was studying mechanical engineering, and after 3 years into the studies, I realized it was going to take me more than 4 years to complete it, and I just felt, to me, being, you know, studying engineering in school, almost felt like I was being in prison.
Carlson knows this type of work certainly is not for everyone.
You know, when you try to hire someone, it's difficult to get someone that will, you know, do this type of work, or they may keep with it for a short period of time and then, you know, go on and do something else. A lot of times I just prefer just to be working by myself. It's just easier. I know that I don't have to worry about taking care of other employees' mistakes. You know, I would imagine that I could probably be, you know, making a lot more money if I had a lot larger company and had a lot of employees. But I feel that, to me personally, it's just a lot less stressful to have to worry about all those other things involved in being a larger company.
Carlson says he is very happy with the money he makes in this line of work. He's not a big spender and has made some good investments as well. But beyond what's in his bank account, it's the satisfaction of what he does on the roof.
There are people like me, I'm sure, out there that who do enjoy this work and, you know, a lot of aspects of it. But it just seems like that there's definitely fewer people that would get into this work nowadays than 20, 30 years ago and longer.
Kurt Carlson says he sees a good, secure future for his line of work, with little chance of automated robots installing new roofs anytime soon. By the way, the worst of the 200 jobs in the CareerCast survey, it's lumberjack. Edgar Tragetz, CNN.
I'm glad he told us that because I thought, well, he's not going to tell us what the worst job was, but that's it. The worst job is a lumberjack. You know the guy, Al, I'm trying to think of his last name, Al Barrow, I think his name is. He's the guy that empties cesspools, septic tanks, you know? I would rather be a lumberjack than do that. Just thought I'd mention it. Let me tell you what's really going on that's great at Idler Sleep Center, and everything is going on great at Idler Sleep Center. Let me tell you how to find them. It's so easy. You know the little jiggy-jag people take to go into Trader Joe's the back way, and you come off of Tank Farm Road, and the first little street you're on is actually called Short Street, and then that you go right to go to Trader Joe's. If you went left, you'd be in the Sleep Center. That's where it is, right there, on Cross Street, 189 Cross Street. And it's a really, really nice showroom, and they have all these wonderful beds laid out, and the Tempur-Pedic is just the cat's pajamas. Tempur-Pedic outsells every other mattress now in America 2-1, and so that's how great it is. Now, here's the thing I want to tell you. It's recommended by Good Housekeeping, the Arthritis Foundation, NASA, and Space Foundation, and a Consumer's Digest Best Buy Tempur-Pedic. Everybody says so. And the other thing that's really great about it, besides a 20-year limited warranty, is that it's the unilateral pricing. It's I'm trying to think of who else I've seen. People that used to sell Bose sound systems, they sold them for the same price Bose did. It didn't really matter where you bought it; you were going to pay the same price. Well, that's the same with Tempur-Pedic. Nobody's, you know, if they say if you can find it cheaper, well, you're not going to find it cheaper, but you're not going to find it more expensive either. So it gets down to, well, who do you want to do business with? And I bought all my appliances from Idlers for all these years, and I just think they're top notch. And I, as a matter of fact, Cody, who's in the sleep shop, he worked in the appliance store for many, many years, and I recognize him. I probably bought a refrigerator, stove, or something from him. Anyway, just nice guy and just good people, and you can take your time. There's no rush at all for you, and so you try the different kind of Tempur-Pedic mattresses. Here's the other cool thing. Besides the fact that they have like three different, well, they have more than that. I shouldn't say three different, but they have soft, medium, and firm mattresses, but they have different ones of those. And then they have the bed that you can adjust. And so you can bring your feet up in the back and your head up. You can lift your head up in the back and on your back. And it's got a massager in there, too, if you want to turn the massager on. But here's the neat thing. You can raise your feet up so they're at the same level as your heart, which is considered to be the best position you could possibly be in. And let me tell you something. Is it comfortable? Holy dump truck. And they also have split kings, they call it. So you can have your side does one thing, and who's ever on the other side of that bed, if there is somebody, they can do their own thing. I wouldn't get one if you were by yourself because it wouldn't make any sense. But if you have a significant other, and they should be significant if they're laying in bed with you, then right there you got the independent adjustability. So I would look into Tempur-Pedic mattress if I were you, and I'd look into Idler's doing it for you because they've been there since 1954 doing the job. Idler's Sleep Center at 189 Cross Street in San Luis Obispo.
All right. Okay, Bill, what else is going on? I don't know. Stuff.
Well, this is all that matters anymore. It doesn't really matter if you know anything, but our slow students have boosted their test scores, which is really important, you know, for as far as getting money and stuff. But despite years of budget cuts to local schools, San Luis Obispo County students continue to improve on standardized tests in math and English, which is necessary. Now, you know that they had this brouhaha over having teacher evaluations, and the union was totally against it, as you know. And so right now it's out of the question right now. It's been defeated, basically. So because teachers did want to be evaluated. You know, well, why would you if you could not be evaluated? But then on the other same token is, you know, you have really great teachers, and I dare say the great teachers do want to be evaluated. Ain't going to happen now, though. Okay. Other things going on. I told you this yesterday. You know, here's hundreds of thousands are fleeing Syria, and Syria's using their air force on different towns now. But also what happened yesterday, did you remember, they had captured an airfield and maybe some surface-to-air missiles, some shoulder surface-to-air missiles. So that'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But the other thing is that there's this whole thing about what's going to happen. And as I told you yesterday, I talked to a guy whose nephew is being prepared to go to, basically prepared to go to Syria, is really what it's about. He's a helicopter pilot for the army. Anyway, so that's kind of weird. Now, here's Israeli officials said Tuesday they are in close discussions with the United States over how to deal with the Iranian nuclear program, seeking to ease tensions that have emerged between the two allies over a possible Israeli military strike against Iran. Dialogue suggests the odds of an Israeli attack in the near term have been reduced. I don't know why we keep playing. I don't understand what we're doing with Iran. If at some point we decide to hit Iran, we decide somebody's going to bomb it. Why in the world did we wait this long? Because they say that they have a thing they're building now, a bunker that is impenetrable by anything made by man. You know, which is possible. You go down deep enough, you know, they ain't going to get to it. That's why we had a NORAD at Cheyenne Mountain in Wyoming. Nothing was going to get to the middle of that mountain. Anyhow, I don't know, Jesus. There was a guy, somebody wrote, what was it about? Was it yesterday's paper? Day before's paper, anyway, the weekend paper. And somebody wrote a commentary on, you know, the questionable legality of Al-Khawari, that we killed an American citizen. Is that judicially right to kill an American citizen because they're involved in terrorist acts against the United States? Can I say this? Anyone that has to question the legality of things in warfare has not been engaged in warfare. I promise you. Anyone that thinks they can question it or has a question about it hasn't been through it. That's my only opinion there. Media reports say that the Japanese government has agreed to buy several privately owned islands in East China Sea that are controlled by Japan but also claimed by China. The government has agreed to buy three of the five main islands called Senkaku in Japanese and Ryukyu in Chinese from some family for 2 billion yen. Tensions over the islands have flared since April. So they don't belong to either one of them. They belong to some family. So they're going to buy them from the family for 2 billion yen. I don't know how anybody got a converter on them. I don't know how much dollars that is. The Kurihara family, I can say it. The Kurihara family. So that will the tensions end now that they've bought them? You know, sometimes I don't get it. That's all. I sometimes don't get it. Here they have a drill into Lake Tahoe's quake history. A sophisticated seismic study could help researchers create new hazard maps for the area. We didn't know that people in Lake Tahoe were concerned about, you know, earthquakes in a large way, but apparently somebody is. So they're going to probably use some of them crazy sound jobberdos. See if they can figure it out. Okay. Here's a fire truck heading towards the towering plume of smoke in the Angeles National Forest. A 3,800-acre fire burning in the San Gabriel Mountains is one of the key ingredients short of potential calamity. The Santa Ana winds are helping out. The fire was chewed through thick brush that hasn't burned in 2 decades. Slopes so sheer that some are 80-degree angles, said Incident Commander James Smith of the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. Because of the terrain, the warm temperatures, it could take a week to contain the blaze, they said. They still haven't declared why they think it happened at this point. Now, here was a thing I wanted to do. Because this is the guy who's in charge of Discovery, the Discovery project for NASA. So I want to hear what he had to say, because I thought that would be very interesting. Here his name is. Let me see if I can say his name right. His name is Thysinger, I hope. We'll find out. Peter Thysinger, and he's the man that's the man of the hour.
CNN.
Radio.
Touchdown confirmed. We're safe on Mars.
3 weeks ago, the Mars rover Curiosity landed on the surface of the Red Planet, part of the new Mars Science Laboratory mission. It's the fourth successful landing of a rover expedition on Mars, but by the reaction of the scientists and engineers here at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, you'd think it was the first.
It is the cerebral return of doing a very hard job, only in the world, first of a kind, and doing it well.
That's Peter Thysinger. He's the project manager for this mission, explaining scientifically the elation of his team. Cerebral return is what we non-scientist types would call joy.
Taisinger has been working for JPL since he graduated from Caltech in 1967.
Well, I've always worked in space.
But it wasn't necessarily his goal.
As a child, I wanted to be into technical education. I wanted to be technical. My dad was an electrical engineer. My mom was a school teacher. I was fascinated by physics and math and chemistry in high school, so I knew that's what I wanted to do. And one summer, my dad actually worked on the Apollo project, and one summer I went to Florida and worked at the Cape in a perfectly non-technical job for a construction company. But I got to see Gemini launch, and I got to see the infrastructure being built. And I liked it.
He began working on various projects, including the Mars Orbiter Mariner in 1971. And while, as he says, he liked it, the whole phenomenon of space exploration really didn't click entirely with him until the Voyager mission. Voyager, the farthest man-made object from Earth, was launched by NASA in 1977 to study the outer solar system. Taisinger worked on that project.
Voyager arrived at Jupiter in 1979, I think it was. And I went to one of the press conferences, and it was the one where they had we had gotten close enough to be able to take a picture of Io, the moon of Jupiter that looks, some people say, like a rotten pizza or an orange attacked by ice. It's got all the oranges and the yellows, and it's got the volcanoes, and it's really stunning. And so that was the first time anybody had seen that scene. And they showed it in Von Karman here in a big, on the big movie-sized screen, and it was just, the whole audience just kind of goes gasp. And I said at that point, instead of standing back, and I said, I know why I do this work.
For that cerebral return he mentioned earlier, sure, but also a much more important reason.
Science, technology is the linchpin of our future. We live in a technological world, be it space exploration, be it computers and information technology, be it biotechnology. We live in a technology world. And tomorrow will be better the more we're able to grow into that world, use that world, learn about that world and whatever. This is very important stuff.
There's also the question, are we alone?
Of the places in this solar system which are possible past habitats for life, Mars is the one that's closest to us. And so that's question number one. Are we alone? Did life ever have a situation where it could have existed on Mars? And if it did it ever exist on Mars?
Two previous rovers, Spirit and Opportunity, that landed on Mars in the last decade, did discover ice. That's one life-sustaining possibility. So the search for further evidence is the mission of Curiosity. Taisinger says, too, that part of the wow factor of his job is working closely with and being involved in something that is bigger than himself.
Something that's bigger than us. Takes us out of the day-to-day. But ultimately, the goal of all this work is to move us as a people forward. Okay, it's to move us forward in knowledge, it's to move us forward in capability, it's to move us forward in education, it's to move us forward on all those axes so that my 4-year-old granddaughter will live in a better world, a more exciting world, more knowledgeable world than the world I live in.
Taisinger says that the Mars rover Curiosity is getting all the attention right now, but there are some 20-plus spacecraft out there in various missions, all trying to understand not just what's out there, but what we are doing here. Jim Roop, CNN.
Oh, yeah, football tonight. The beginning of the season starts at 5:30, and then you and I'll get together again tomorrow at noon. I'm Bill Benica, thanking you for joining me. And until then, may all your trails be happy ones, and don't believe everything you hear here, because
this is Talk is Cheap. The game is over. The Friends and Neighbors Network. Game over. With Bill Benica.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. smile, and until then,
happy trails to you, till we meet again. Dark flat land she rides on a pony she named Wildfire, a whirlwind by her side. On a cold Nebraska came a killing frost, and the pony she named Wildfire busted down and stalled. In a blizzard she was lost. She ran calling dark of the moon I planted, but there came an early snow. Then a hoot owl howling outside my window now, about 6 nights in a row. She's coming for me, I know, and on